This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to Went to Mode King's Mellow, the show that follows the fantastic Chelsea FC women's team. And now the weekend saw Chelsea return to FA Cup action with the visit of Championship side Crystal Palace to King's Meadow. Chelsea just played Sunderland in midweek in the Conti Cup, as we reviewed on our last episode on Friday. So they knew that the challenge that the Championship sides can face. They reacted by putting out their strongest possible team with a couple of illnesses thrown in as well. And ended up taking 81 minutes to break down a stubborn Crystal Palace defence when Mara Ramirez got her first Chelsea goal with an exquisite back heel into the net. And the title of tonight's show, Went to Mo Kings Meadow, episode number 121, is A Touch of Cup Magic. And thankfully, as I'm your host, Dean, wasn't able to even watch the match and just watch highlights. I have got two guests with me who were there and they're going to spill the tea on all the goings-on at King's Meadow this weekend. Starting in no particular order with the excellent Sophie Spittle. Sophie, good to see you again.
Yes, and you, Dean. Evening to the other guest. I won't steal your thunder, Dean. Good to be back. Thanks for having me on again.
Yeah, and the always excellent Rich Bates. Rich, good to see you as well.
Yeah, good to be back on the show, Dean. We'll see how much I've got to say about this particular game. I don't know if there's a lot that can be said, really, but we'll give it a go.
Well, I've obviously done the decent thing and watched the highlights and got about three questions from it. So we'll see how that that goes. We will be joined at some point by Dane, who I know didn't watch the match either. Well, I'm sure didn't watch the match, because he never does. So we'll see what he's got to say on it. Now, remember, you can listen to the show live every Tuesday and the occasional Friday on Mixlr. It's mixlr.com. Search it for Went to Mo Kings Meadow. And if you sign up to an account there, you can join in the show by posting on the live chat page, as Buffer has already this evening, and you can join in the show and put your comments in, and I'll try and get them read out as we go. And now, remember, if you are listening to the show on the Went to Mo Kings Meadow podcast platform, please do leave us a nice 5-star review, or if you think it's terrible, a 1-star review, any review will do. I'll take ones or fives, nothing in between, please. On the show tonight, in part one, we're going to look at that 1-0 win over Crystal Palace in the FA Cup. And then in part two, look ahead to the massive WSL clash on Friday, where we take on Manchester City at home. And we're going to do all that right after this. Straight into the action on the lineup then. Chelsea, the 4-2-3-1. Hannah Hampton in goal. Ashley Lawrence, Jess Carter, Nathalie Bjorn and Neve Charles in defence. Aaron Cuthbert and Melanie Leupolz in midfield with Johanna Ritson-Cambridge, Frank Kirby and Guru Wrighton supporting Mayra Ramirez up front. Emma Hayes using three subs in this match, remembering what subs are. Beaver Jones and Sherkan Nuskin coming on for Johanna Ritson-Cambridge and Frank Kirby in the 62nd minute, and then Jelena Cankovic coming on for Guru Wrighton in the 76th minute. That left Ciro Mizovic, Sophie Ingle, Lauren James, Iv Perisse, Michael Hermano and Kadisha Buchanan as unused subs. Stats-wise, Chelsea with 76% possession, 13 shots, 3 on target, 7 corners and 4 fouls. To Crystal Palace's 24% possession, 2 shots, none on target, 1 corner and 7 fouls. No one's going to ask Dane the first question, but obviously he's not here yet. So Sophie, when we spoke on the podcast on Friday, I thought that Emma might stick with sort of a similar team that beat Sunderland in midweek, given the level of opposition. Dane thought there'd be a few players coming in, such as Hampton, Cuthbert, Wrighton and Lauren James. But as it was, James aside, Chelsea's sort of strongest team at the minute. Was you surprised to see that lineup?
No, I thought it would be. I thought she'd go strong, hopefully get some early goals and then take players off at half-time or 60 minutes. As it happened, it didn't pan out like that, but that was my theory. And also, I think if you give players too long a rest between Sunderland and Man City, they look rusty because they're not... These players are used to playing Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday, whatever it is, twice a week. And you take them out of that rhythm, and I don't necessarily, for some players, I don't necessarily think it's the best thing. So I was expecting to see a strong team. I think I probably would have said that team, especially she didn't make any substitutes on the Sunderland game. So it wasn't surprising for me anyway.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, I don't know who Lauren... Who came in for Lauren? Was it Fran?
Fran, yeah. I noticed it straight... After they'd like sort of broken up from the team photo, I noticed it sort of straight away that, hang on, Fran's on the pitch, someone's come out, because obviously she wasn't in the original starting lineup. And it worked out that after about like a couple of seconds that it was Lauren, thinking, oh, okay. Obviously, was there for the warm-up, didn't see anyone sort of have any issues in the warm-up. So wondered what on earth it was, whether it was just like, I don't know, like a muscle been pulled and we just hadn't noticed or what. Obviously, it turns out that, you know, she was ill, which I guess is the, you know, you don't want Lauren to be ill, but in terms of, you know, reasons that you'd be out of a game, that's probably the best one. But yeah, it was a bit of a shock. We've gone through all of the lineups, everything looked okay, and then, yeah, came out and LJ wasn't there.
I must admit, I did notice that when Fran was walking off the pitch, the guy with the clipboard was talking to her, and I thought, well, that's a bit random, talking to Fran, she's walking off the pitch. And Lauren was the first to leave the pitch. I thought she was limping slightly. So when she wasn't in the team, I assumed it was an injury, but clearly it wasn't. It was illness. So, yeah, it made sense then why this guy was talking to Fran as she was walking off the pitch after the warm-up.
Yeah, there was a picture of her after the game with her big coat on, and she did look rough to her. So hopefully... they get that cold out of her and she's all fit for Friday. To talk about that. Now, as I mentioned already, I did only watch the highlights. And the first half consisted of just one chance for Johanna Ritson-Cambridge, who went round the Palace keeper and then put the ball into the side netting. And that was it. Then it went immediately on to the second half. Sophie, was that a fair reflection of Chelsea in the first half?
Not necessarily. Fran Kirby, after about 2 minutes, had a shot that sort of looped and landed on the top of the net. And I just think if that had gone in, we would have seen a completely different game. And there were a few other chances as well, not as clear cut as they were against Sunderland, but there were a few other chances at that end. But again, Rich and I are the same situation here. It was the other end of the pitch from us. We couldn't see how clear cut they were. So I think there's probably a few more than those highlights showed, but there wasn't a lot. Palace were very resolute in their defending and very physical.
Yeah, something we'll mention a bit later with Emma Hayes' quotes after the match. So, Rich, obviously, when we watch highlights, we're at the hands of the editor. They put in what they want us to see. Would you be on the side that Chelsea played well but Palace defended well? Or Chelsea were poor and Palace were just a pain in the arse, basically.
I would say that we didn't play well until I think the first couple of subs came on in the second half. And then we started to see a bit more sort of quicker play sort of out wide trying to stretch Palace. I mean, the chance that you refer to happened in the first half injury time. And it was the one sort of time where they kind of switched the play quick. Kirby like pulled down the ball and right and plays in JRK. Obviously goes around the keeper, but, you know, puts the shot into the side netting. That was the best chance. As Sophie said, Fran did have like that speculative effort, which just went over sort of very early on. And I think there was also a Mauro Ramirez header from a Neve Charles cross, but it didn't look like it was the easiest chance, see, at least watching it live. And I've watched it back since, and I still don't think it was a particularly easy chance to get. But yeah, Crystal Palace defended very well. They effectively played with a back six. They did really sort of make it tough for us to break them down. But yeah, I kind of felt like that even after half time, it still wasn't quite there until we made the subs that we did.
Yeah, I mean, Johnny on Mixler says it was an intense match. Palace were defensive all the way through. 80 minutes aside from one offside. And obviously no shots on target, two shots in total. And one corner doesn't speak of a particularly attacking outfit. But given what happened to Sunderland midweek, hardly surprising that they didn't want to have the same fate handed to them by the WSL's best and strongest starting 11 anyway. Let's just pause for a second as we welcome Dane onto the show. Yeah, so we've heard obviously from Rich and Sophie on their experience so far of the first half. We are now joined, late, but better late than never, by my regular co-host, Mr. Danny Whittle. Dane, first of all, good to see you. And secondly, what was your thoughts on Chelsea's first half performance against Palace?
Yeah, good to see you. This is now two shows running, so hopefully I'm going to keep up a consistency. The first half performance was as flat as a pancake, pardon the Tuesday pancake day pun. It was lacking in energy, in attacking prowess from our forwards. I thought they were just nullified. And this happens, you know, we saw it sort of last night with the men's with a low block. You would think, as intelligent as the footballers are, sometimes they just get a bit miffed, don't they? And they just struggle. And all it takes is instead of obviously either the coaches or the managers trying to change things from the sidelines, what it takes is a good half-time chat and a change of a system and just a simple extra 10, 15, 20 yards up the field. I thought everyone was off to an extent. I thought Neve Charles was still huffing and puffing. Thought Ramirez to an extent had a couple of good turns and was fouled quite clearly, wasn't protected very well. I've forgotten the Crystal Palace's player's name. She was number 8, tall with short socks. And she her job was just to foul. She'd cut in from the left and just stop up play, very like tactical-esque, like Guardiola, Barcelona, Man City style tactical fouling. And you needed a strong ref to, like, you know, stop that quite early on with a couple of yellow cards, but she allowed them to get away a bit. So I don't think that helped, obviously, the tempo much either.
Yeah, pretty much echoing the thoughts of Sophie and Rich on that first half. In the second half, Sophie, you know, obviously it looked like Ramirez started to get a bit more involved in the play. She obviously had a chance that was well saved by Lamborn in the Palace goal. Then she hit the bar. Obviously, I'm not sure on the minutes of this. I think Aggie was on at this point by the time she got these chances, as Rich said, we played better after the subs. But did it feel like the goal was coming, or was there a tension that one of those games where Chelsea can play all day long and not score?
Well, you know me, I'm ever the football pessimist, so excuse me. I was in the latter camp that I thought, oh, is this the game that we're going to miss the clutch Sam Kerr? No, I think Rich is spot on. I think the subs made a real difference, especially Aggie, whereas JRK wasn't necessarily taking the player on and getting past her. As soon as Aggie came on, she was doing that. She was taking the player on. She was getting past her. She was creating space for Ashley Lawrence around her and players inside. And I think that made a big difference to how we played and the space it was creating, because suddenly they had to worry about putting a defend two defenders out there or three defenders out there rather than just maybe the one or two they had in the first half. And ultimately, that's the side of the pitch that the goal came from, with a cross from Ashley Lawrence. But yeah, Ramirez's goal, that I've not seen it on a highlights anywhere, so I don't know why it was offside. Or I think Ramirez was coming back from an offside position, so I don't know if she was deemed to be interfering with play. That's why it was flagged. If we'd had VAR, would it have been overturned? I don't know. But I suspect it was offside straight away, so I straight away looked over and realised it wasn't and didn't celebrate, unlike everybody else around me. But I think that was just a couple of minutes before the goal, or it certainly felt like it. And yeah, I think Aggie really made a difference, and Nuskin does as well. She just offers something a little bit different when she comes on as a sub. I think when she starts games, unless she's playing right back against Sunderland randomly, she almost gets lost in that midfield. Whereas I think when she comes on as a sub, she can impact the game really well. And I think she made a difference as well.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, you was sort of nodding in agreement there when we were talking about Aggie Beaver-Jones, and we speak so much about her positivity and her forward thinking. Her first thought is always, how do I get in behind, or I want to take this player on. So we said that opened up the game for us, and interestingly, they didn't put the offside goal on the highlights. So obviously no idea that had happened. So I wasn't able to watch the match. But, you know, again, same sort of question to you. Did it feel like that goal was going to come?
Well, I always think yes. And it's, I think players always think that anyway. They always feel like they're going to score, even when it's not been a particularly good performance. Yeah, Aggie made a big difference when she came on. As I said, it was the going in behind or running in behind, also taking on defenders. She's not scared to do that. And when she goes past them, she'll put the ball into the cross. I think she created about three or four chances after she came on. And, you know, eventually we obviously do break them down. Just going back to the disallowed goal, I think Ramirez and Nuskin were both standing in a fairly similar area. So I could understand why, if it was Ramirez only who was flagged offside, why it was given as that. They were both kind of standing in the same area. Ramirez definitely was offside. I don't know about Nuskin for sure, but they were both kind of in the same sort of area of the pitch when it came back in, at least from the bit of the south stand that I was in. Yeah, Aggie definitely made a big difference when she came on.
Yeah, which something that Johnny agrees with on Mixer as well about Aggie Beaver-Jones. And Dane, obviously the goal did come in the 81st minute. Leopold's releasing Lawrence down the right-hand side, who crossed to Ramirez at the front post, and that was a finish worthy of winning any football match.
Yeah, very confident, considering, you know, she's probably still on a high from the transfer, you know, meeting her teammates, the whole newness about, you know, that fresh feeling. But still, the audacity to do that, still when you haven't scored your first goal for the club, shows the sort of footballer she is and she's going to be for Chelsea. Just to go back to what the others were saying, I wasn't worried about Palace scoring. All I was worried about was potentially losing on penalties, because then that is a lottery. I never thought Palace once at like scoring, and I'm never one for when it's, oh, unlucky Palace or this, if a team's just going to come and defend. You know, that's their prerogative. You know, I've got no problem with that. But then if a team who's been attacking or trying to attack or trying to score a goal the whole game eventually scores that goal, why is it always unfortunate for the team who wanted to defend the whole game? But going back to that finish, yeah, very impressive. I thought she was lively. She sort of buzzes around in her own sort of way, because she looks a little bit of a unit, not like a Kirby buzzing around. And as I said, a couple of times she was pulled back by her hair. Sure she was, it felt like, to an extent, which I thought was, well, the referee just didn't jump on. But, you know, she kept her head, didn't she? She kept her head. And it's very exciting, because she's got a turn of pace, which I think we've seen flashes of. And with with a game potentially on Friday night where there'll be more space, that will be very interesting to see.
Yeah, I'll tell you why she scored. It's because I wasn't there.
Well, I thought you'd say because Jane went for a wee.
No, and I wasn't watching either. So she thought, I know what I do. I scored an amazing goal that you can only watch on YouTube. Because that happens a lot to me. I mean, Sophie, you could call it a touch of cup magic.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely a lot of Zola-esqueness about it from the when he scored against Norwich in the cup in, what was it, 95, 94, something like that? No, he wasn't there then, 96, 97, 98. Anyway, sometime around then. It was fantastic. When we saw it go in, it was at our end, and we saw it go in, and we were just like, wow, what a goal. I mean, what a way to mark your first goal for the club. It was brilliant. I think going back to how she performed the rest of the game, I think her hair was pulled a couple of times. I also think they marked her with three players all the time. So if she beat one player, she then had to beat another two players. And I just wonder if not having LJ in the team, they'd obviously set up to play with LJ. And when LJ then dropped out right at the last minute, not having that other player that can run and... What's what I'm looking for? Use up, that's a bad word, use up defenders.
Occupy.
Suddenly, occupy, thank you. Occupy defenders. Suddenly that's all of that defence goes on Ramirez. So I just wonder if LJ had been in the team, if again, it's a moot point because she wasn't, if we'd seen it, we might have seen a different outcome and more goals earlier in the game. But yeah, Ramirez was just like so tightly marked. She'd beat a player, they'd either then pull her back or there'd be two others for her to get through. And they weren't averse, as I say, to hair pulling or just shirt pulling or pulling her down, which, yeah, it's frustrating, but we and her are going to have to get used to it, just like Lauren's had to get used to it, because if she is as good as she seems to be, then people are going to foul her because that's the only way you're going to be able to stop her. We've just got to then take advantage of that, of those free kicks, be it something a little bit different or actually getting our heads on them or whatever in the box or getting decent crosses in from them to make teams think, well, okay, if we foul her, we're going to get punished anyway, so what else can we do?
Yeah, and having players where you need to double up on them, eventually you're going to run out of defenders to do that, which should come to our advantage. Rich, I'll let you chime in on the goal as well, because I think it deserves people that were there to witness it in the flesh to tell us more about it. And I can produce great headlines for shows, but I wasn't there, so I can't describe this goal in all its glory. So I'll leave that to you.
Yeah, so the ball was basically... Neve basically sort of did a switch from the left-hand side, which Aggie picked up and then laid it back to Melly, who it's like a ball, just clips in a ball first time, and we got in behind. And I didn't realise how good that pass was until after, and I watched it back, because it was one of the few times we kind of caught Palace on the hop. And Lawrence running behind and then putting the ball for Ramirez. And obviously the finish is fantastic. But also I think she was anticipating that was going to happen as well, at least sort of the movement, because she obviously makes her movement to the near post pretty quick. And sort of going back to how she sort of played as well, in the move that basically led up to the offside goal, I'm pretty sure that she hit the bar, and it was kind of sort of like a similar move where there was a bit of one of the few times in the game there was some one touch passing that had sort of occurred, where I think it was Charles who basically played the ball into Wrighton, and Wrighton hit across sort of first time, and Ramirez hit the bar with, like, I think she just poked out a toe and it hit the bar. But she does seem to be gaining better chemistry with her teammates, obviously after being there for a few weeks, which is good to see. But yeah, I think, you know, and she also had a shot sort of early in the second half where she rolled a defender and just used her strength really well and got a shot off, which the keeper saved. The keeper, by the way, annoyed a lot of people in the South Stand in the second half by just leaving a water bottle just over the goal line. And for most of the second half, the South Stand were basically just shouting at her to basically pick up the bottle and move it. And trying to get the referee's attention, and just wouldn't do it every time. And I almost respect that she wasn't doing it at all. But yeah, luckily that didn't play a factor, because obviously you could have had the nightmare scenario where the ball hits a bottle of water and doesn't go in. But yeah, luckily it didn't.
So who was it that started that chant, Rich? Was it you?
No, I didn't start the chant. It was someone I think further down, because I usually at the back, but with the south stand. But no, it was someone at the front. I can't even remember what it was said. It was just basically along the lines of move the water bottle, but it wasn't me.
Yeah, move your bottle out the goal, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, move your bottle out the goal. Yeah.
Fair play to her, I think. Their big day out, isn't it? I suppose. With Leupold, she's that sort of player where she does amazing things every week, but every time she does it, it's like, oh yeah, she's a really good football player. I don't know why we seem to forget, or I seem to forget anyway, that she is. Obviously we go 1-0 up with sort of 10 minutes to play. Maybe expect the opposition to come out and give a go because they've got nothing to lose now. But no shots on target. The highlights didn't show them going near the goal once. Dane said he didn't fear them scoring. Was that a right assessment that Palace weren't in this game at all from an attacking?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, they stepped. The keeper Lamborn kept taking the same amount of time for free kicks. I was expecting after we scored, like the goal kicks to get super quick like they normally do. But no, she put the ball down, took her time, knocked it long. Carried on exactly the same way. So they were sort of like, I think, hoping for a set piece or something to try and get a goal in, or were taking a 1-0 loss as a victory almost, which you can't blame them, really. They defended really well. It is what it was. I mean, the 10 minutes of added time that we should have had, we had 8 minutes of, that was right. I mean, at the time, I was thinking about it, I thought, we know what as long added time as we can get because we hadn't scored yet. After we scored, I was like, oh, I don't really want 10 minutes now. But in the end, it was 8 minutes. I think that was fair because Palace did do a lot of time wasting. And as Emma said afterwards, the ball felt like it was out of the game more than it was in the game.
Yeah, I mean, Rick, speaking of Emma, she described it as a cup game. Palace with five at the back that they don't usually do. Shirt pulling, time wasting, the ball out of play more in this game than any other. What I understood from that was the game was shit. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah. In a matter of words, yeah. I don't really blame Palace sort of for the tactics that they use. I mean, they're effectively just trying to shorten the game and try to get to extra time and beyond with the ball being in play as little as possible. And, you know, they did a pretty good job of it. It's just, I think, as I kind of said before, once Aggie came on and sort of started having a go of it, it just made the game was just a bit more stretch. And that's when we really started to create chances. And, in injury time, Aggie's pulls back a ball to right, to Melly, and she hits the post with a shot as well. So, the chances sort of were keeping coming. I think Jess Carter should have also had a penalty as well. It was a free kick that was from out wide, I think it was an injury time. It was like a ball was put in and Jess was pretty clearly held and referee just would,
play up. The star of the show. Some refs don't like to get involved at all.
Yeah.
AI refs is the future of WSL, I think. artificial intelligence.
As long as they're built off Emily Heaslip, yeah.
Yeah. If that's the brain of the operations, then I'm fine with that as well.
I think there are a couple of offside decisions that were flagged offside that obviously the goal were others, but there were others where we probably weren't offside. But we were so quick and our players were so quick that the lines people just couldn't keep up, and because they were ahead of the play, they flagged them offside. So I don't think the reffing team had their best game, put it that way.
No, times under West Ham, you see how far back they are from the play. It's like you can never give a decision. Where you are, and I know when Simon's on the show, he sits at the sort of penalty box, hates the Lions people more than me. Emma also mentioned, finding a way to win. You know, it's not one dimensional. Some weeks you do it this way, some weeks you do it another way. I suppose that's all that matters, that Chelsea won 1-0 and they're in the hat for the next round.
Yeah, we got a bit carried away, didn't we, on our previous show. We just seen us score quite a few past Sunderland, and we were all like thinking of four, fives, and sixes for this game. I suppose in hindsight, it's easy to get excited. But, you know, as I said earlier, Palace came to not concede. They're having a good season. you know, they're doing well within their own right, within their own league, and you wonder if they would have, but you know, they, no one's got divine right. They don't have to just step up the field 20 yards or play open just to suit us, so then we can play better. They thought, they did what they thought was best. Then you imagine if they would have lost 5-6-7-0, and then that could have, you know, off-railed their season. So I don't blame them for playing that way. It wasn't exactly exciting to watch. Commentary was shocking. It was clearly done by someone in their house, and the levels of their voice compared to the noises from so off and so out of touch. So it was a hard watch overall. But listen, we're in the next round of the FA Cup to go with all the other amazing things we're going for this season. So you take it. Do you know what I mean? You know, they're footballers at the end of the day. They did the job at the end of the day, and that was it.
Yeah. And Sophie, she also described Palace as a WSL team. And I suppose if this was a league match, losing 1-0 away to Chelsea is a good result. In the FA Cup, I suppose you're out of the cup, so I don't know how good you can say that is. But how much credit do you think they should take from their performance, given what we did to Sunderland? And also just to mention on their fans and the atmosphere, because I know that Palace put out scarves and flags for their fans in the North Stand. First time I've ever really seen the team make an effort with their away supporters.
Yeah, definitely. I think they had pretty much most of the North Stand. So the bit on the, as we would look at it, so from the South Stand looking at the North Stand, the bit on the left-hand side had loads of scarves over the seats. That was full. Then there was like the ultras at the back of the bit behind the goal, and they had like a Palace flag behind them. They were the ones that were generating a lot of the noise. And then there seemed to be like groups of Palace fans dotted around the other part of the North Stand as well, with maybe some Chelsea fans right on the end. So they definitely brought a decent amount, probably more than any other team I've seen here, apart from Arsenal, I think. So, yeah, they definitely brought a good amount. And they had all the men's Palace songs going for a lot of the game as well. So they were definitely sort of behind the team and generating atmosphere for their end of the ground.
Yeah, fair play to them. I suppose, which is a nice change, I suppose, from seeing what we saw sort of West Ham in the last round, brought about 10 fans. We can maybe replace some of these clubs in the WSL soon.
Yeah, I think I saw a tweet from their official account earlier that said they had 450 in the away end on Sunday, which is pretty good number. And yeah, as Sophie said, they made some noise. Which, you know, I don't think there's been a better team or better like sort of away end this season than them. Obviously, you know, we've had some of the games, you know, moved to the Bridge, but of the away ends or the away fans that we have had, they probably were the best. And yeah, I mean, they're looking, I think, I can't remember where they are in the Championship, but I know they've scored the most amount of goals by a pretty big margin, actually. So, you know, they might, you know, we might see them next season in the league, depending on where they actually are. I think that there must be like second or third at least. I haven't looked at the table for a bit, but the goals they've scored was the clear sort of marker or like thing to sort of, you know, that stands out when you look at the table for them. They were, it was definitely much, much better atmosphere than it was when West Ham, I don't know, but West Ham brought single digits, maybe? I couldn't even say.
One carload, I think, for West Ham. And when I did the research, I do research sometimes for the show, Sunderland are second, and they're a point above Palace, who are in third. So Southampton, I think,
got a game in hand, I think.
Yeah. So yeah, we could see them, and as Dane said, picked the beat by us, Sunderland could derail their season.
Palace have a game in hand. If they win it, they'll be top.
Yeah.
They're definitely in the mix. Yeah.
Yeah, and if they do a league expansion, I suppose.
I was listening to another podcast last week, and they had one of the Palace players on the podcast, and she was saying that they'd been training to play in a completely different style to how they normally play, to play against us. And that was obvious because they clearly don't play like that if they've scored the most goals in the Championship. And their number nine, I think, had scored 14 goals in 14 games leading up to the game against us. So fair play to them for playing as defensively well as they did do. And that's not their normal style of play.
Yeah, Emma did make a point of their five at the back, actually, that they don't do. So obviously they was expecting something completely different as well. But yeah, fair play to them, and good luck to them for the rest of their
season. And wasn't the manager one of our coaches for a while?
She had been in the Chelsea system, and she was in the Tottenham system as well at some point, or youth or assistant coach or something.
Because I did mention it on Tottenham commentary.
Yeah. Yeah.
They must be bored of losing to us by now, though. all three under 18 boys, men's and women's this weekend. Chelsea getting wins over Palace. We like to keep it that way. Now, obviously, we do a player of the match poll. I didn't watch the match, but Simon Kingman, a good friend, did do the poll for me. Aggie Beaver-Jones got 11% for her cameo. Ashley Lawrence, 16%. Erin Cuppert, 17%. But Ramirez was the runaway winner with 56%. Sophie, obviously, I've got no comments on this poll at all, but I'll let you have your say on it.
As per normal, the person I would have given player of the match to isn't on the poll. I thought Melanie Leupolz was superb in this game. I really do. She was an oasis of calm in that midfield. And that pass through for Ash Lawrence to put the cross in on the goal, as Rich said, you didn't realise how good it was until you watched it back on the highlights. But yeah, no, I thought she, every time she touched the ball, she just created space around her and oozed calmness and quality. And as you say, you forget how good she is. And then when she plays, you think, how on earth did we ever play without her? She's such a good player.
Yeah, when I tweeted it, Clayton Beerman, who's been on the show, he mentioned Leupolz as his choice. Rich, what about you?
Yeah, I'm agreeing with Sophie. I think it was Melly. As you know, I don't think there were too many sort of standout players in the game. It was just one of those where it was very difficult to sort of, you know, pick who it was. And I get why people have voted for Myra, because she did have chances, and you know, she is connecting better with the rest of her team, and obviously she did score the only goal of the game, and it was a great goal. Yeah, I can't really add any more words than what Sophie said. She's a class act on the ball, and yeah.
Yeah,
that's where the guy came from. That just that quick little pass over the top.
Are you going to make it a full house, Dane?
No, I agree with Sophie about Lawrence. I thought Lawrence had a good game, but I thought so did Neve Charles. I thought they were both up either side of those flanks, really trying to, you know, to push Palace even further back to make something happen. The good thing about Neve Charles is she's really comfortable on her left side, but also obviously she's naturally right. So. So impressive, and she's still learning the position, and she looks like she's played there for so many years. I thought Erin had a typical game. I thought Aggie, although she helped change the game, it wasn't one of her best displays, but it's just her energy, and she buzzes around. She had a couple of long crosses that just went off for goal kicks, but I was desperate for her to come on because I knew her energy is, the way she can go left, she can go right, you know, pace, scares people. So she did that. But some of the final decisions just didn't come off. It's just one of those things. But yeah, I'm from the Strikers Union, so I'm coming from someone coming into a completely different new culture, new teammates, probably doesn't know the language, and to pull that audacity to pull that off, you know, because when you play, no matter what level it is, you sort of know when confidence is high and when it is not, and she must, for to have not scored yet and to do that, she must be a very confident player. So yeah, I'll go with a strike all day long, even if they stand on the halfway line like I used to do for 85 minutes with my hands on my hips. You turn up at the last minute and score a goal, then yeah, get all the glory, good luck to you.
Yeah, Simon actually hates that when Strikers win player of the match, they don't do nothing but score. Not that Ramirez did just do that. We got the lost spirit of Jay Flem on Mixler saying that she agrees. They agree that Melly and Aggie Beaver-Jones are joint players of the match. And I think I'm going to have to sack Simon from doing polls anymore.
Well, Erin's always going to be in there when Simon does it, isn't he? Isn't she?
Yeah,
so.
I suppose. But at least it's not on me this time. So there we go. I suppose the final thing then, Everton away in the quarterfinal, which, if I'm right, Rich, which I'm not often right, is that the last time we lost in this competition, in the quarterfinal, away to Everton?
Yeah, but that was at Goodison Park in lockdown. I'd assume we wouldn't be playing at Goodison this time, we'd be playing at Warnall Park. But yeah, it's been a while, hasn't it? What year would that have been? 2020? Yeah. It was like July or August 2020.
It was after the season, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was a while back. Yeah, because we won the... Yeah, we'd won the... obviously, we won the league, WSL, obviously because the season had shortened. And then I think... Was it the next time we played? We had these FA Cup games. Good Lord, that was a while ago.
Yeah, I mean, so have your thoughts on the draw? Obviously, all the big teams, well, Chelsea and Man City, avoid each other in this competition. but not the easiest draw away in the park in Liverpool.
No, not the easiest, but I would have taken it beforehand. If somebody said Everton away, I said, yeah, I'll be up for that. Better if we'd been at home, obviously, but Everton away. To be honest with you, anybody apart from City, I would have been happy with, as we'll come on to. The preview City scare me, so the most we can have got to play them in the Conti Cup. Let's try and avoid them in the FA Cup as well, please.
Yeah, Everton were the last team to beat Chelsea in the Women's FA Cup, winning 2-1 at Goodison Park in the quarterfinal in September 2020. And obviously, they meet again in 2024. The old red and blue kit that we gave away, Dane, Chelsea wore that day. Looking at the Fran getting taken out.
Awesome. Yeah, do we have a... Yeah, well, especially as when I knew someone who could print it up. Yeah, I don't know them anymore. They've left that company, so that was a one-off. And yeah, it was a nice little kit, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, but your thoughts on the draw?
Yeah, I was happy with that. Like Savvy said about City, it was nice to avoid them for now. But let's be honest, we're gonna if we get through this and they get through, then it's likely that if we can avoid them in the semis again, then it'll be a nice final. Avoid them in the semis, and it'll be a nice final to go and watch. I'm not. Savvy said she was scared by them.
I'm a pessimist, Dane. Don't forget, I'm a pessimist.
I just think something it can either go two ways this season. I think it's going to be something special. I'm very confident that we'll be going out on high with Emma, I think.
Yeah, I would have liked a home draw because it's just another match that I can get to. But away to Everton, the other fixtures are Liverpool face Leicester, Tottenham host Man City, and Brighton face Man United. Those fixtures to be played on the 9th and 10th of March. So just under a month's time for them. But we're going to go for a break now, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about the Manchester City game on Friday. Before we do that, a reminder that issue 9 of Kingsmeadow Chronicle is still available to buy online. It's reduced in price online. So if you're in the UK, you can just pay £1 and then £1 delivery. So the £2 you would pay in person, you can get the fanzine for that. There's just over 30 copies left, and I'll have the rest of them hopefully outside Kings Meadow on Friday ahead of that game against Man City. So if you do want one, which features great writers, including Sophie, who's with us tonight, make sure you order one quickly before they all go by Friday. And then issue 10 will be out in time for the Leicester game after the international break in March. So don't go anywhere, and we will be right back.
Cheech!
JK! In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chich, I'd be bereft, inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live, it's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK. And best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy I could cry. Where do I sign up, Chidge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/ChelseaFancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to part two of Wentz and Moe Kings Meadow. Time then to look ahead to Manchester City in the WSL this Friday at Kings Meadow. And Dana, obviously a huge game in the title race, but sort of in our favour that it's not a game we must win. It's more sort of a do not lose, which I think Emma sort of prefers. Knowing we can just get a point from the game and be happy with it. Whereas City have that pressure where if they want to win this title, they really do, I think, have to beat us at home.
Which, let's be honest, they don't seem to be scared of us playing at home. Coming off a good result. Is that correct? Arsenal are now out of all competitions. And is there anyone asking any questions? No? What are they still in?
Conti Cup, they play the London City Lionesses tomorrow night. So, and then they play Villa in the semi-final if they beat them. So I think they're probably going to be in the final of the Conti Cup. So they could win the Conti Cup again.
No questions being asked about old Jonas at the moment, no? Not season he's expected, no doubt.
I've heard a few people wondering about him, yeah.
I feel the Emirates. What more do you want?
Yeah, well, you've got that. So obviously, Man City coming off a good result because they lost at Arsenal in the league, didn't they? Earlier on in the season, I'm sure they did. So to go there with the confidence and win, it looked like stats wise it was a tight game. I saw the highlights, which involved Katie McGabe, which I think it's always funny to see Katie getting involved. Old Chelsea fan Katie getting involved all the time, winding people up. And it's going to be a tough game. It is going to be a tough game. It's hard to go in with a thought process of, well, we can get away with a draw. They have to win because Man City do come at us. That game earlier, was it? Yeah, when they really come at us early on, didn't they? And we looked so unfit. And there was some risky and some surprising team selections. Aaron Cuthbert was so off the pace, it was untrue. It's going to be an exciting game to watch. For some reason, I can keep on seeing Man City's ground, but it's our ground, stupidly. I am confident. It's a hell of a difference playing away to playing home.
Yeah.
I think it's two different teams. It's like Chelsea playing Arsenal at home. We are so comfortable against Arsenal at home at the Emirates.
Yeah, something about the Emirates, I think, gets to Emma Hayes. There's a ghost there or something. So if it is the biggest test of the season for me, City, obviously, as we said, in great form, won all of the last five games. I do think they are gettable defensively. And also the fact that this is at Kings Meadow and not Stamford Bridge, and I think Chelsea deliberately avoid Man City at a big stadium with that bigger pitch because of how they play with their wide players. But we have had a lot of joy against City at home. In recent years.
Yeah, we have. I mean, as Dane said, the Minihad, whatever it is called up there, the Jouer Stadium, it's a bit of a bogey ground for us. I think we've only ever won there in COVID. I'm not sure if we've ever won there with our fans there. So makes the Conti Cup semi-final up there a bit scarier. Yeah, we're a different team at home. And I still get scared by them, but then I always overestimate how good opposition teams are and underestimate how good we can be. So, as I say, football pessimist comes out in force in these big games, and I get worried beforehand and very nervous, and I don't enjoy watching them, and the people around me don't enjoy watching them either. So apologies to anybody who stood near me in the South Stand on Friday, because I won't be a happy person unless we're winning like 2-0, 3-0 by half-time or something like that. So, yeah, it should be a good game, two very good teams. Before the game at the away, I said whoever I can see whoever wins these games is going to be the team that wins the league, because City haven't got Europe to concentrate on and they've got a settled squad. And even without Jill Roard, you can bring in Mary Fowler or Philippa Angledahl, and then they seem to carry on playing the way they're playing. So the settled squad has worked for them this season because they haven't got injuries. So, yeah, their front three are scarily good sometimes, but you're right, they can be got out defensively.
Yeah, they are a team that starts a bit slow and builds up their trajectory. I'm quite glad that we're playing them quite early on in terms of the league second game. And Rich, I know you like your NFL, and I had to find a way to mention my beloved Chiefs at some point tonight. So here it is. Yeah, I mean, there's a huge target on Chelsea's back after four consecutive WSL titles. Alex Greenwood's already spoken about wanting to beat Chelsea. But like the Chiefs on Sunday in the Super Bowl, Chelsea know how to find a way to win. And we just spoke about a result on Sunday that encapsulates that perfectly. Are you expecting a few corn dogs on Friday? What a reference, rubbish. That, by the way.
Rubbish.
So I'm kind of going into it thinking that this season, well, if we go back to last season with Manchester City, especially in the big away games, I think they lost all three of them. And when I'm talking about the big three, I'm talking about us, United and Arsenal. I'm pretty sure they lost all three. Well, they've won the first two this season. They won at Old Trafford and really silenced Old Trafford. They lost the league game against Arsenal. No, I stand corrected. They lost the league game 2-1 to Arsenal. But they have just beaten Arsenal at Meadow Park. So they've kind of corrected that. And there was sort of a pattern with Manchester City in these away games that I'd sort of noticed where they'd have control of the game in the first half, or this is the kind of the way it sort of goes. They have control in the first half and then they don't take their chances. And in the second half, the other team does. And that played out quite a lot last season in those games. I don't think it has this time, apart from the Arsenal one. But then again, the Arsenal one, it was basically because of a mistake from the goalkeeper that they scored the second. It was Blackstenius who sort of ran onto scored into an empty net. I do think they're definitely better than they were last season. I think their starting 11 is really good. If they get injuries towards the end of the season, I don't know how well they can replace some of those players. So I don't think the squad is definitely not as deep as ours. Obviously, the front three are excellent. It's a real, really good blend of players that they've got up front, and they're kind of set. I'm kind of glad that we've brought in someone like Romario Ramirez because, you know, at least our defenders have got practice against someone who's going to be as physical as Myra is, obviously in Buddy Shaw, who, again, on the cup game on Sunday, because I was sort of watching it in the West Ham bar beforehand, she was getting fouled a lot. And I don't think she gets the fair treatment from referees. Maybe hopefully that continues on Friday. Yeah, I think they've been pretty good this season. And, you know, we know, fortunately, that a draw is okay for us. City do need to come down to us and win, ideally for them. I don't really know which way this is going to go. I kind of feel like it probably does play into our hands that City will have to open up. Definitely, obviously, they're not going to play like Crystal Palace. They are going to have a go. And they've obviously got the players that can, be very effective against us. But then, flip that round. Hopefully LJ's back. Hopefully there's a sort of a bit more space for our forward players to be really effective. And yeah, I think we've got a pretty good record against Kings Meadow against them. So, hopefully that pays off again.
Yeah, I mean, this is a good thing about having mixed up because I do research sometimes, not all the time. But as you mentioned, Bunny Shaw, a couple of comments that she has a calf injury.
It's something that she did come off after about an hour against Arsenal, but from what the comments I read from Gareth Taylor said that it's something they've been managing over the last few weeks. So I'd still expect that she's going to start on Friday. I'm not going to be like, oh, she's in. Oh, yeah. You know, I'm going to expect, yeah, I fully expect that she's playing. I think it's just something that she's been nursing. So she might get subbed off again, sort of early, but I fully expect she's going to start.
Well, I don't know where to kick her. Anyway, I mean, Sophie, a win puts Chelsea 6 points clear. With 8 games to go, probably would say that that is the league title won. If anything, the last few seasons is to go by. If we can win, and I think that just piles more pressure on City, if anything, you know, so they need to come away with something from this game.
Yeah, definitely. As I can't remember, as Daniel Rich said, it's a must not lose for us, but it's a must win for them. And generally, those situations are ones that we thrive in, especially in at Kings Meadow. So yeah, interesting to see how they do react to the pressure, because as Rich said, last season they didn't necessarily come up clutch. This season they seem to be doing that more so, especially Lauren Hemp and Chloe Kelly, and especially towards the end of game. So we've got to keep on our toes for the whole game, and yeah, keep them quiet, because the Chloe Kelly especially, I just think she's QPR fan, she's going to hate Chelsea anyway, isn't she? But she's really going to want to beat us in that. And she seems to be, that attitude she's got at the moment, she was winding the Arsenal fans up apparently on Sunday. She's been known to wind the Man U fans up. So I think there's a little bit of that shithousery in there that we all love in our players, but hate in opposition players. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I won't say I'm looking forward to it. I'll be looking forward to it if we're winning 3-0 at halftime or something silly like that. But yeah, as I said, I hate these sorts of games. So...
3-0 half time, still a little bit early for me. Let's get to the 75th minute, and then maybe we can relax a little bit. Dane, obviously, we spoke last week about Chelsea having an A team and a B team at the minute. So Sunday, we're sort of expecting a similar team to what we played on Friday. So a similar team to what we had on Sunday. Probably Lauren James in for Kirby. Or do you think Emma Hayes will throw a couple of surprises, because City's midfield does worry me, and if we don't match up the numbers in there, I think that's an area we can be got at.
So surprises in an extra central midfielder like Ingle, as well as Aaron and Melanie, or Nuskin?
Well, yeah, perhaps, but I'm asking your thoughts. What would you do?
I think possibly if we were the away team, I think she will stick with the 4-2-3-1 unless she puts one of the only way you can do that is possibly you, as I said, you bring in like an Ingle and a Cuthbert, and you move one of them slightly forward to play in that three behind the forward. But again, you're changing something which, you know, as we've seen, it's likely to be Lauren there. We presume Guro. She's like Joanna again. I think she's been a little bit ineffective in recent weeks. But I think Guro's been ineffective recent weeks. The levels, I think we've been spoilt with Guro. I think the levels she's reached in the last 18 months to 2 years, she's struggling to reach them this season. So it happens. Doesn't make them a bad player, doesn't mean they've lost it. It just means that, you know, they hit a lull for a little while. Perfect game to get it back on Friday. I just don't think she'll go with a 4-2-3-1. You know, she can change, she can adjust in game.
Well, I think she'll do Hampton, Lawrence, Carter, Bjorn, Charles, Cuthbert, Leopold, Cameron, James, Wright and Ramirez. And Sophie, we saw against Everton a few weeks ago where they went to that 4-4-2 out of possession and maybe try and shut the midfield off that way in their shape. What's your thoughts on the team? Well, your sound's not coming through at all. You're not on mute, but you are on mute.
Sorry, I'm on mute. I think she will play that team, but I would be tempted to bring Kirby into that 10 and put LJ out wide, because Kirby works better defensively in that position than LJ does. And by putting LJ out wide, you still get her running with the ball ability like that you get when she's in the 10. But then you lose... No, she's getting better at tracking back. That's not fair to say you lose her defensive capability. You don't, because she's getting a lot better at tracking back than she has been. I think that's one side of her game that's really, really, really stepped on. So I would be tempted, and clearly I'm not Emma, to play Kirby instead of JRK and have a front four of Kirby, James, Ramirez and Guru.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, there's always sort of, not the risk, but the sort of temptation to worry too much about the opposition and build your team around them rather than focus on the talents that we've got and not play to our own strengths. I mean, what do you think Emma's going to do? What would you do?
I think Emma might put Perisay in for Lawrence. I do feel like she trusts Perisay in games where we might have to defend a bit more. As good as Lawrence has been over sort of the last few weeks, it does seem to be something that Emma does do in these sort of bigger games. I'm almost tempted to do the pack up midfield thing, but then I do think that also takes away from our strengths going forward. And I would probably keep it as a 4-2-3-1 personally. And then I don't know what I'd do with LJ though. I don't know whether the move would be. I mean, she has been liking Nürsken as sort of like, as you've sort of brought up, like almost like the sort of the Jesse Fleming type player. And then maybe you move Lauren out wide potentially. I think that's maybe what I would do. I think Emma might bring Perisay in. I don't know anything else. I don't really want us to, obviously we got to, you know, nullify their threats as much as possible, but then we got to obviously realise it's a difficult sort of act to balance. I think City's team, I'm pretty sure that that's going to pick themselves, so they know. Maybe we're the ones that got to, you know, slightly think about it a little bit more. Yeah, a bit of a tough one. But I think Perisay is, I think she'll start. That's my sneaky suspicion anyway.
Yeah, well, as we said, we haven't literally got to win. So expect Buchanan and Bjorn to play in central defence and Carter and Charles to both play left back together in fear of Lauren Hemp and Perisay and Lawrence on the other side and James up front and no Ramirez. And the tactic is to boot the ball to Lauren James and hopes that she can do something with it. But we will see, of course, about what time's kick off? 6:45 on Friday, is it?
7:15.
So 6:15 on Friday night. We will know how wrong or right we are with that selection anyway. So I suppose it's time for score predictions. And Sophie, I'll come to you first.
Don't do predictions, sorry.
Yeah.
I'll just play what Dane's going to say, though. So that's all.
Sophie doesn't do predictions. You should know that by now.
I'm just trying to ask her for it.
Sorry, no, I won't break the habit of 30 years of supporting Chelsea. Every time I've done a prediction, we've gone and lost badly, so I don't do predictions anymore.
What if you predict City to win then? Would that have a reverse effect?
That just goes against everything I would want to do, so.
Well, I'll let you off then. Rich, please pick Simon. Dane's prediction, please.
2-1 Chelsea.
2-1. I'll go for 2-0 then. Because I think you're going to say that. One of those, anyway. Dane, what about you?
I did, you know, I don't think of it until you say it, and I did have 2-0 and then them scoring a late goal and maybe putting a pressure on and us holding out. So Rich has taken that. You've taken 2-0, so I'll go with 3-1.
3-1. There we go. We've got the lost spirit of Jesse Fleming, 2-0. Johnny Superfan, 2-1. Buffers 3-2 Chelsea. As long as Chelsea win.
Where was the official one? Where was she? Is she injured or she just dropped completely?
We don't talk about injuries.
I couldn't work out if we had enough substitutes or not, or if she'd gone to the States early for the Gold Cup.
I know she didn't play particularly well against Palace, but I think it would have been harsh to have expected so much of Ramirez about at least Mir on the bench.
We had 9 subs on the bench.
We did have 9, yeah. But Lauren, I think Lauren was classed as one. Was she actually on the bench to available or not? So it would have been 8 then.
I think once you drop out, you can't go on the subs bench.
Well, BBC listener, that's why I've got
Robert. Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, they did for some reason.
And Beck says 2-1 Chelsea. Can't see City not scoring. Hannah Hampton only keeps clean sheets. So that's after that one. That's why 2-0 is going to win the prediction prize next week. That prize is absolutely nothing. Sadly, that is all we've got time for this week. Dave, thank you for eventually joining us. Good to have you back.
Yeah, sorry, I made a mistake of doing updates of about 15, 20 minutes to go, and they took a lot longer. And I thought, so it felt quite rushed after that. But yeah, it's good to be back. As I said, getting some sort of consistency, start doing these regularly again and start seeing your face again is nice, obviously. Nice to share it with Rich. I haven't done a show with Rich before, so that was nice. And me personally, and nice to see Sophie again, which I have done a few shows with her in the past.
Yeah, it is always super helpful when you have people on the show that watch the match, especially as a host that didn't. Sophie, my thanks to you.
Thanks for having me on again. Good to see you again, Dane. I'm glad your son's all on his way back to a full health.
Appreciate that. He's downstairs now with the other host who didn't want to come on tonight.
Yeah, they're watching Toy Story 3, which does get emotional at the end. So can't
blame him.
Yeah, Rich, good to see you, mate. Thank you for joining us again. Your insight into the match.
Yeah, no, always good to be on again. Nice to be on the show with Dane. As I said, first time we've met across the internet. obviously, I think I've been on every show that I've been on. I've been on with Sophie. You know, we're keeping a very good combination going here.
Very good. Very good. Very insightful, both of you.
Insightful double act. Always good to have people that know what they're talking about, which we always do on the show, outside of the usual hosts, anyway.
Just hang on to their coattails.
Yeah, and talking about people that know what they're talking about, we will be joined next Tuesday by Simon Kingman and Matt Ball from Wild Wild Chelsea to review that Manchester City match. So make sure to join us then. And a reminder, if you love what we do, then please consider joining up on Patreon and help support the show. Your money, your £5 a month, helps us do things like pay for Mixlr, pay for editing software, pay for Zoom, and all stuff like that, including our Future Ballers campaign that we do in the summer. The link for that is patreon.com/Kingsmeadow, and we'll leave it in the description box as well for you. That is all from us. Thanks for listening, and from Kingsmeadow to Wembley, keep the blue flag flying.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.